Hey guys, you missed me. So hey everyone, welcome to another welcome to another episode of Through Autistic Eyes. I am your host, Christopher D. Casson, also known as the Autistic Guru by some, and also an autistic that went from reclusive to more of an explorer. And right now we are going to explore the world of meditation and the benefits from it, especially in terms of helping someone that's on the spectrum. So here with me tonight is a good buddy of mine, Kimberly Lechnick. She was actually on one of the most earliest episodes, actually. So I wanted to thank you again for hopping right back on again while we sip our tea.
Yes, my pea flower tea.
Mine's still hot, so I can't drink it yet because I've got ginger tea because I want to be able to get some sleep tonight instead of staying up. I usually have it, my matcha green tea latte in the morning, homemade. So I guess the first question is, what tea do you have again?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Let's see. It's a new one for me. It's called Chamomile Rose. Hi, Helene. It's great to see you.
Hey,
it's great to see. It's called a chamomile rose. I love chamomile, Chris, but I've never had pea flower in my tea before, so this is interesting. And mine is supposed to promote sleep as well.
Yeah, because I believe there's no caffeine in it, just like ginger tea doesn't have caffeine. So that's good for both of us.
Yes.
Because I need to make sure I get plenty of sleep, because otherwise my anxiety tends to spike the next day for some reason. And luckily for us, we're going to talk about meditation to help lower that anxiety. Ain't that right?
Oh, it is so right. It is so right. And that's one of the many benefits I know that I love about meditation. So yeah, absolutely.
And apparently Helene here is having purple root beer. No tea for me.
I love purple, I guess she's root beer.
Purple root beer is an actual thing?
It's an actual thing. I love it. I haven't tried it.
Okay.
With us. We would love to try it.
Yeah, that's also kind of a joke within a nonprofit called CB4L.org, Chemo Buddies for Life. She likes to always talk about searching for a purple pen. So she tends to associate stuff like, I would like to hug a purple tree here right now. Or I'm still looking for my purple pen. Or has anyone seen my purple bus? And all this other stuff.
Oh my gosh.
She loves cracking us up. So I guess the first question is, how did you discover meditation? And considering your work with helping families, how does this help you be able to help them with this as a possible option?
Well, actually, you know, that's a great question, Chris. It actually helps everyone, right? Mm, right? Yep. It helps ground me, but then it also helps ground the kiddos. And just to kind of give everyone a flavor of my experience, I have over 25 years experience supporting children and families. And a big chunk of that was working with kids on the autism spectrum. And that was for age zero, which is absolutely fascinating because that's where I kind of jumped into brain research. And really loving to dive into the brain. And then all the way to age 14. So how does it help? It helps me. It helps ground me. And then it helps me because I'm calm, connected, and grounded. It helps me show up in a real nice, calm, authentic way, and ready to help and support not only the child, but the family. So absolutely phenomenal. And how does it help the child? Oh boy, I think we could talk about that for a little bit.
Which we're definitely going to get into a lot with further questions on top of that. And apparently now Helene's now trying to search for a purple rock now. So I believe that's Amethystis? Are you looking for Amethystis? That's a bit of a tongue twister there. So, you know, and you know, I kind of like to get into more of how you got started with meditation in the first place, and you know, the different types of meditation that maybe you have explored, because there's definitely all kinds of different types, such as, I guess you could say Christian prayer is, in a way, a type of meditation, more of a spiritual aspect, and that's how everything got started, such as within Hinduism, which there's also something called Japa yoga. There's actually more than one type of yoga, not the westernized stuff that you and me know, but mm-hmm. And it's essentially the repetition of chanting a mantra or a divine name during meditation, usually either silently in your mind or out loud, and usually with the choice of deity. So, you know, to go back to the question I was asking, how did you get started with meditation? What different types of meditations did you explore, along with the pluses and minuses?
I think my answer is going to surprise you, Chris. I think it's really going to surprise you. So how did I get started? Well, actually, I had experienced anxiety, right? So I experienced anxiety. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that it didn't feel good. And I knew it was something that I wanted to explore. So I started meditating. And so as for the kind or the type of meditation, that's what I absolutely love about meditation, because we often think of it, like you said, there's different types. We often think of it as a guided exercise, right? But the wonderful thing is that it doesn't have to be a guided exercise. It can be something as simple as practicing breath work for 5 minutes. It could be something as simple as prayer. It could be dance, it could be golf, it could be taking a shower. So it doesn't have to be this elaborate thing. It can be something that's built into our routine. And so I'd love to kind of talk about those kids, and I let me know where we're going, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we are about to get into that, because you know, I've experienced different types of meditation with one of the more recent ones is more like a walking meditation during the, you know, the, why is my brain trying to freeze up on me on the most critical point? That's just the way my autistic brain works sometimes. But, you know, walking meditation in my Zen group type of thing, where we just walk around and pray like this. And of course, Sherry, hi Sherry, she says morning and night meditation for me, which is good. As I know, sometimes some people do like twice a day, one very early in the morning, one very late in the evening. So go straight into this. To quickly go over this, I've started looking this up beforehand, and one of the fascinating things I found is associate professor of biomedical sciences named Wei Gao at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles stated that he thinks that the amygdala, which is the little almond-shaped part of the brain here, where it's like an alert fight or flight system kind of thing, where that's also where the anxiety can come in as well, that might actually have a big role in the emergence or development of autism-related traits. And it's also commonly described as a center for detecting threats in the environment and for processing fear and other emotions. And in typical people, the amygdala continues to grow for longer into adulthood than other brain regions do. But people with autism, in contrast, it goes faster than normal in early childhood, up until around the age of 12, and then tapers off and sometimes even shrinks going into adulthood. And a 2016 image study, Harrington and his colleagues found that in people with autism, the amygdala seems more involved in anxiety than social difficulties. And the following year, they showed that children who have both autism and anxiety issues have a smaller amygdala than controls do, but that region is of the average size in those with autism alone. I'm guessing he was talking about maybe like the size of the amygdala to go along with the first one. And there's more and more that I could go on and on and on with finding this online, but with this type of information in mind, how can we use this information to help with a better understanding and on this close association that's usually there with autism and anxiety, especially with kids that are dealing with so much and struggle to kind of process and understand it?
So are you saying how process and understand the anxiety?
Yeah, and where it comes from and, you know, just how to be able to handle it. And when we bring in meditation, just the being able to, just how it could, you know, help someone that's going through those anxiety spikes where due to processing the environment that causes them to just go like that sensory overload, that, or even that classic, man, the mind is just,
you know,
not looking for me, but I think you understand what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally understand. And so I think there's a lot of factors in that. So when I think back to a lot of the kiddos that I worked with, right, their diets, they were very challenged with their diets. A lot of times, depending on what they were doing to get support, some of them were eating a lot of sugary treats. So when you're talking about the amygdala and you're talking about, you know, it being a certain size. So let's say, you know, it's the size of a prune, right? If it's the size of a prune and we think about how much a prune can hold, you know, that can only expand so much, right? So you have to, you know, kind of remove it, right? So I think diet, you know, we can't just, it's not like a blanket solution, because we have to look at all aspects of the child. But if we're looking at it in general terms and you're looking for things that would be helpful, some of the things that we would do is calming, you know, it's, you know, and again, if you're looking at age, so if I'm looking at some of the toddlers that I worked with, or even some of the young, you know, the babies were so much fun. The babies were so, so much fun. But even if you're looking at someone that, you know, little one or a 2-year-old, you know, it's just calming and it's so much fun. It's just quiet. You know, we can use our voice. We can use their favorite comfort objects. If we're talking about a preschool child, same thing. Sometimes it was the favorite comfort objects and it was a squeeze. A lot of my kiddos loved to be squeezed. Mm-hmm. They love that squeeze. It was like being in a cocoon.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of what I read in a book about Temple Grandin, who's a very well-known autism advocate who happens to be on the autistic spectrum as well. And she described this one story of how she was on the farm and she saw how the cattle go in this machine and that compressed kind of thing to calm them down. And she kept begging, I believe it was her aunt, until her aunt eventually just gave in and just let her go in there and actually experience that. And it did bring that sense of calm. And I'm guessing that's also part of the reason why there's such a popular thing with weighted blankets on top of that, of being able to help them calm. And on top of that, you know, breathing exercises, which is just part of meditation, correct?
Absolutely. You know, it's just like, let's be quiet together. Let's be quiet together. And then, you know, it's after we're quiet together, you know, I would have this comfort object and it would be like, wow, you know, look, and they would take their comfort object and they would squeeze their comfort object. So yeah, there's just so many wonderful things. Again, when we look at the meditation that we do as adults, a lot of these same exact strategies, parts of meditation can be used with our kiddos, except with our kiddos, you know, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. And so we can actually learn something from the kiddos to bring into our meditation to make, you know, our meditation fun too.
Yeah. And I've noticed you mentioned before about, you know, how you handle the meditation, whatnot, with someone that's very young, like a baby, compared to someone that's much older. Is there different ways you would actually go about it depending on the age that they are?
Absolutely, Christopher. Absolutely. So if you're, you know, if I was working with someone two, that looked much different than three and four, than five, than a school-aged kiddo. So I'll use an example of a school-aged kiddo that I worked with, and he loved being squeezed. He loved it. So, you know, when we're talking about the squeezing, somebody might say, oh my gosh, squeeze. Like, that sounds like it could hurt someone. But we're talking about what you call a sensory system. And sometimes the sensory system can be overreactive. Not always, but sometimes, depending on the kiddo and the adult. And so the sensory system was overactive. So in this case, again, these are not strategies that work across the board for everyone. You have to be very, very thoughtful about what strategies you're using based on each individual child. But the squeezing, this one young man, he loved squeezing. And it was like, as soon as you squeezed him for 2 minutes, it was like he released and he was like, oh, I could take a nap. You know? And then sometimes what would happen is he would just sit in the lap and he wanted the squeeze. He wanted the squeeze. He wanted to be squeezed because he knew. He knew, just like that example with Temple Grandin, she knew that that machine would help her, right? As humans, we are so bright and we know what is going to benefit us. So he would sit down in the lap and put my arms around him. And he knew. He's like, all right, honey, get squeezing because I need this. And then it'd be like, okay, I'm going to go play, you know?
Yeah, especially if they're just coming home and they've just been repressing it the whole time just to be able to look normal. And then when they get home, they suddenly, all of it explodes out, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the ways that sometimes some kids on the autistic spectrum end up having a meltdown or a sensory overload is that they've been forced to hold it in for so long and eventually it has to come out. So, so for me growing up, I did not like getting hugged at all whatsoever. I always ended up with a frown on my face. So for an example, for if someone, a kid like me that didn't like getting hugged, what would you suggest in terms of that?
So I'm not sure what age you were thinking of. Do you have an age in mind?
It was just elementary in general, so you could pick an age, really.
Okay, so maybe 7, 8. So one of the things that was really, really important was to find something that the kiddo liked, right? Sometimes it was the flashing lights. Sometimes it was a special toy. A lot of times it was the cartoon characters. It was SpongeBob was very popular, still is popular. Other cartoon characters, depending on the kiddo, you would go through a whole host of strategies. I love that, Helene.
It's a comment from Helene, just for those listening in on the podcast version, audio only. Helene just responded, I'm going to hold my purple rock like Kimberly just did with the squeezing. Yeah, thank you, Helene. So anyway,
I love that. So what I would do is I would suggest learning what the child likes. What are the child's reinforcers, right? What are the child's reinforcers? And I might have a box with tons of things and just try, you know, for a couple sessions. You're like, what do you like? You know, do you like this? Do you like that? And then once I found that reinforcer, that's what I would use. So in that instance where you're explaining where you did not want touch, it might have been that you had something like a cartoon character, or you had a special comfort object, and that would become your reinforcer. So if we, you know, were working together and we were working on a skill in school, we want to make sure that we have those as reinforcers, so that when you do go through that or you need a timed break, timed breaks are so important. They're important for everyone, but breaks are also important. Then you would get that desired object, and that would be how you could receive. Again, there's many things. You know, the squeezing, if it's touch that it is, then
And to say that it's almost meditative in a sense, right? Right? Just to make sure we stay on the topic with someone going, well, what does this have to do with meditation? Well, meditation could be a lot of things. It's more of how you be able to, whatever helps you to focus instead of being bombarded with all these different, all this sensory stuff that causes them to overload in the first place.
Well, think about it, Chris, too. With meditation, a lot of what we do is self-awareness, right?
Yeah, so mindfulness,
And mindfulness. So a lot of these things are about self-awareness, right? So we have to put that in context. A lot of it is self-awareness. So using the body, right? We need to learn how to control our bodies, for instance.
Right.
So mindfulness techniques help everyone, You just may need to pare an exercise down a little bit to be very simple, i.e. the squeeze, right? Because that's self-awareness. I need physical touch. I don't need physical touch, right? You know? That's an awareness that's being developed. That's not just not really connecting it to meditation. That is meditation, absolutely. Mm.
Yeah, and to go off of something else, I found a parent that actually knew the benefits of meditation, mindfulness, and its association with autism, but didn't know how to get from here to there, so to speak. So when the child was upset, the father would exhort him to take those deep breaths, and he would, and then the child just exaggeratedly huff and puff and then start screaming again, and did find it difficult at the starts due to similar issues, but he did eventually get him on track where the child was just taking on it with. But I would like to hear your opinion on, you know, how he would be able to adapt from that type of situation of trying to get the child started in meditation, so to speak. Because for even adults, we struggle a lot to even get started and just keep it going. So just some of the roadblocks and how to overcome them.
Yeah, I think that's a good conversation. I don't think that we could cover absolutely everything, you know, right here today, but then just using that example of the breath, right? That was a self-awareness for that young person to huff and puff. That was a self-awareness. That was how he was breathing. Now, maybe over time, if we look at everything as a skill, right? Over time, maybe it wouldn't be a huff or puff, right? Maybe it wouldn't be a huff or puff. Maybe the breath would become more smooth, right? But it's just like everything else that we do. Everything else that we do, it's a skill that needs to be sharpened. And we need to follow, in this instance, we would follow the cues of the child to see what was working. Again, going back to that example we talked about with the physical touch.
Right.
Now we would know very quickly that you, like, no, because non-verbally you're telling us this is unpleasant. This is unpleasant and I don't like it. Whereas another kiddo would be like, oh yes, oh yes. It would be
Rob that just came in and he just made a comment with, I will not be a huff and puff because I don't need to blow anyone else's house down. I'm getting tongue twisted tonight, but anyway. good to hear from you, Robert. Continuing on.
Yeah, so if we go back to the breath, I absolutely think that the possibilities are endless. But again, as adults, if we're doing the meditation along with our child, it's going to be all that more powerful because we're going to learn that we need to take out that skill of patience, right? Mm-hmm. We need to access our skill of patience. And when the huff and puff is coming out, we need to know that just like our meditation, their meditation is growing too.
So going into, well, they again started with connecting the parents with the child. So what kind of other ways and benefits in terms of furthering, deepening that connection to meditation?
I think that it would be just as, I think since we're just starting to talk about this, it'd be simple, just as simple to find, again, if there's exercises or activities that your child likes to do, that would be a great start. That would be a great start. Maybe it's walking, right? Maybe it's walking and that's the meditation, right? I know some of my students love jumping. Maybe jumping and you jump together if the child's more physical. If the child's more calm, right? If the child's more calm and likes to do calming things, then you would find maybe a breathing technique, you know, and you could make it a game. Again, making games with our children, our grandchildren, are so much fun and so powerful. And again, connecting them to the meditation will follow their cues, verbal and nonverbal, to learn what works for them and what doesn't.
Hearing all these benefits for, you know, meditation in general, you think that we would have more of these practices in, you know, our school system, especially if, say, even a school that's more catered to the disabled, and yet there isn't. In your opinion, why do we not really implement this kind of stuff, you know?
You know, I don't know what is currently going on in the schools I know we have an organization called Giant Steps in our area, and some of the larger facilities where the kids are getting educated. I do know that a lot of times yoga and mindfulness is starting to be used more and more, but I agree with you, Christopher, that it's something that we need to continue to explore and continue to use and continue to do research on, because it definitely can, I believe, oh my goodness, just the benefits that I've gleaned from it, I believe that it could have just wonderful. I think everyone should be doing it. Everyone should be meditating on some level.
Yeah, I would think so too. But I remember also being one, actually it was in a clubhouse chat where it was like a preacher, a minister, and he saw the benefits of meditation. And yet when he tried to bring it in, everyone was like, no, that's an Eastern thing. We don't want it, just Christian only. And they kept looking at the surface level and he was getting a little bit frustrated. So it's, you know, what would you say to someone that is really resistant using meditation for whatever reason. It could be religious because they keep associating it with like Hinduism, and it's like, no, we don't want that multiple God stuff in our home kind of thing, you know?
I would really say, you know, start out by saying meditation is more than sitting down and doing a guided meditation. Mm-hmm. Meditation is in the shower. You know, what would that be if your child had a routine? And I think we started our conversation out like this, right? Mm-hmm. If your child had a routine and they love the shower or they love the bathtub, that's a form of meditation. Now, we're not going to have bathtubs and showers in our schools, but what that's doing is preparing the body to learn in some cases for the child, you know? So it doesn't have to be, like you said, this complex thing where we're sitting down and we need to get caught up. Because I think that what you're talking about is people resisting, right? And if they were meditating, Chris, the funny thing is they wouldn't be resisting.
Yeah, because, you know, you think meditation, you think all those different mantras, like Om Mani Padme Hum or Om Ganapataye Namaha, the former, like, Buddhism, the latter Hinduism kind of thing. But it's more than just saying a bunch of mantras, sitting around doing nothing, you know. And that could be just as helpful for an autistic child that's, like you said, a lot more active. And you want to calm them down, but in some ways, maybe that's his way of getting through stress.
Yes. And that's such a great point. And, you know, as you were talking, it was making me think of the meditation I did last night. And it was a kindness meditation. So think about this, and I'm actually thinking about it right now, is some of the students had all augmentative communication devices. And for those of you who don't know that, that means the child was not fully verbal, so they need assistance in speech. So what would happen if we had "I am lovable" on their augmentative communication device? I am loving, I am kind, I am loved, on their augmentative communication device. What would that do to change their brain if every day they were saying these things? We're talking about anxiety, and anxiety, for instance, is just a bunch of muck going on in our monkey minds. We're telling ourselves lies. What if we filled those augmentative communication devices, or even our homes or our schools, with "I will always love you"? You know, I mean, how, you know, there's just nothing you can say about that. You're rewiring the brain with these loving thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. I'm kind of reading Robert's very, very long comments here. So, "Those times of tranquility I have where I am wrapped up with gratitude, feeling really at peace. When I was still working, it would happen around 4 a.m. to about 5:30. I didn't always spend it alone. I would get on the video call with a friend in Australia. All those times I am walking in a state of joy. I know those times I am not walking alone. It was at this time it was suggested that I seemed as though it could take, I could take on the whole world." Mm-hmm. And that's basically... Oh, go ahead.
No, just powerful, because that's true.
Yeah, and it also just, it's also a way of being able to deal with all the negative thoughts, especially with, you know, bullying being such precedent in school, and just, you know, finding a way to being able to filter that out. So could you explain how meditation could be beneficial in that kind of type of situation? Because a lot of people in the autistic spectrum do experience all that harsh bullying, online and offline.
Can you clarify that, Chris? So you're looking,
you know, just being able, we're just doing an example of how this meditation could help with them deal with such a situation through meditation, of being able to.
Absolutely. So again, I think it starts with communication, right? So mm-hmm. whatever that child's communication mode or mode of communication is, it's important to have that available. Because I just want you to imagine for a moment, a young person who's not able to either verbally just speak their words out, you know, and we say that we need to speak it as a release because we're all containers, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine having that inside of you. So I love the communication boards, and I love, there's a software called BoardMaker, and they make these really cool pictures. And I think that it's important, no matter what your child's mode of communication is to have that accessible to them so that when they come home from school, leaning into that routine, they have a way to tell you, how was your day? And if they experience something that was unpleasant, they may not be able to get all of their words out or be able to communicate the full message. But the point is, again, it's a skill. So having that communication first and then doing something calming, like breathing, because communicating for everyone is challenging. But if you lean into the breath and teach that as a skill in your home, again, that's going to be grounded. That's going to be a habit that that child is probably going to gravitate towards, because they're going to be able to tell you that it makes them feel good on some level, verbally or non-verbally.
Okay. And let's see. Apparently, Helena is now looking for a purple monkey now. So it's just sometimes this chat is fun, you know. And Robert responded to the bullying saying, this is true. I know someone in Japan who was systematically bullied throughout high school, the same few people in the same family.
I'm sorry to hear that, Robert.
Let's see. We grew up with it at home. At times it felt like he couldn't breathe, that it did not matter how carefully you walked on eggshells, you were going to get it without warning at some point in the day. So my mind's already getting overloaded. So, you know, let's quickly talk about, you know, you mentioned doing this type of meditation yesterday. Could you tell us more about the Facebook group that you actually host for this?
Oh, absolutely, Christopher. I'd love to. So I'm really, again, Christopher shared, I'm really passionate about meditation, and it's not any specific genre of meditation. What I love to do is just build meditation with a community. And so I do have a community called Tea and Meditation. And just like Christopher and I are drinking tea together tonight, getting ready, preparing the body for sleep. I have a community, again, everyone's developing their meditation practice the way they want to do it, right? And that's the great thing about meditation. It's your practice, right? It's what works for you, but we're doing it together in a community. So, you know, community is more important more now than ever. And so that's a little bit about the Tea and Meditation community. Thank you for that, Christopher.
Yeah, especially since we, after being separated for so long, thanks to the shutdown last year, it's kind of showing us how important it is to being able to be with a group. And even with the Zen group I'm in, they talked about, you know, you can do meditation alone, but it could also be just as, if not even more powerful when you're in a group or in, like in Buddhism called a Sangha, to be able to do these practices with each other.
I agree, because the energy then and the vibration that you're sending out into the universe, right? So we've been talking about some people in the universe, in humanity, that aren't meditating. And just this conversation that we're having tonight about it is really raising the vibration. It's really creating the awareness for families everywhere, really, to consider it, to practice it, or to deepen their practice.
Hold on a sec. Sure. Yeah. The dog wants to explore, you know, going on his own meditation walk in the background.
I love it. Hopefully
the dog doesn't do a barking meditation. That could get a little bit annoying.
Might be soothing to him.
Okay, let's see. Robert says he got a hold of a lifetime study done in Switzerland of children that have been bullied and followed them into adulthood and documented the differences later in life between those who had counseling and therapy and those who did not. It continued to impact late in the old age. He also said he calls it solitude, and the first time he noticed it was the 21st day of the 12th month, 1980. And Helene says, both of you are having tea, and I'm still enjoying my purple root beer. Hey, oh, whatever floats your boat.
We're preparing the body for sleep. I'd love to try that purple root beer, though. It sounds delicious.
Yeah, who knows? It might be just root beer that has purple dye in it. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like fun.
So, you know, since we're kind of, you know, how about start closing off with, you know, maybe get a little bit of that sample of that meditation you do in the group, just a small one, just to prepare us for a good night's sleep.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. So I encourage you, wherever you are right now, to find a comfortable spot, whether it's a chair like Christopher and I are sitting in,
or maybe... Well, mine's a metal chair, so that might not be the most comfortable, but continue.
For someone, it may be. So find a place where you're feeling most comfortable, floor, chair, bed, wherever you are right now. And I invite you to have your eyes open or to close your eyes. Whatever you feel called to do. Enjoy this moment of silence. As you feel your body connecting to the ground or to the surface beneath you, gently place your hands on your lap. Feeling any tension in the face, in the shoulder, melt away. As you connect deeper and deeper into the surface, taking a moment to connect the breath. As the breath comes in and out of the body, accepting anything that is with you right now. Welcoming everything. Feeling calm, feeling peaceful. Putting your hands out now in front of you, as if you're holding your hands out to receive something. Maybe your spirit guide is coming to give you something. Or maybe you just are holding something, an object that reminds you of someone that you love, someone that you care about deeply. saying these words with me, if you choose, out loud or silently to yourself. I am loved. I am kind. I am safe. I am peaceful. And on the count of three, bringing your hands to your heart space. One, two, and three. Bringing your hands across the heart. Feeling all this love entering space. Feeling the heart expand with love, peace, and joy. Breathing in through the nose and exhaling through the mouth. One more time, inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the mouth. On the count of three, opening your eyes when you are ready. Knowing that you can access this meditation at any time you wish. One, two, and three.
I have to unmute the mic because the dog was trying to start something when you said, it's time to be signed. And the dog's like, no.
He knows his routine.
Yeah, it turns out he was wanting someone to watch him while drinking water because, you know, the dog was abandoned. So kind of gets anxiety on, you know, any possibility of sneaking off like that, you know. But anyway, besides that, I wanted to thank you again for your time to be able to talk about this subject. And what's a way for them to be able to contact you if they have any further questions or even want to learn more about the TM Meditations group that you host, of how to get in?
Excellent. Well, I have a link that I can add to the comments when we're finished here today. And okay. I can put that in and I can put some contact information in there. But Chris, if you ever want to talk about this again, this is a fantastic topic. I would love to join into your discussion. So just let me know.
Yeah, and maybe a few others. Make this more like a panel, so to speak, to talk about how the, you know, being able to stay calm in situations such as what happened last year, with especially all the anxiety and the rise in depression and whatnot that came from being restricted so much, and how to be able to handle that kind of thing. That's actually an interesting idea.
I agree with you. So let me know. Let me know. I'd love to participate.
And, you know, for those that might be, you know, listening in on the podcast version, could you just speak how they'd be able to contact you about, just in case they're watching like the audio version?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for reminding me on that. Mm-hmm. So you can reach me either by phone, 331-303-2454, or you can email me at intentionalpathways, capital B, capital D, @gmail.com. And I would love to have a conversation with you and talk more about TM meditation or anything that you feel called to speak about.
know, just got to swallow that tea first before I speak and not while in. So anyway, thank you again so much for your time. And of course, this is another episode of Through Autistic Eyes with, again, your host, Christopher D. Cass. Sometimes people keep calling me Kaysen when it's Cassin, but, you know, Kaysen, Cassin, tomato, tomato, potato, potato, whatever.
It's all good. It's all good, Chris.
It's all good. It's all good. Even one time got someone calling me Cassin, like it's French, but even though it isn't, even though there's a little bit of French in the family history, but that's another topic altogether. But anyway, your host, Christopher D. Cassin, a.k.a. The Autistic Guru, signing off, and I hope you all have a pleasant evening. So take care, everyone.